So I spoke about this earlier in the year. I'm just going to repeat it because it bears repetition. When I was growing up and I was your age, to me, the entire drama of Kiddush Hashem and of Chilul Hashem was very, very small scale. What will my local Gentile neighbor think if I act unruly? What will my local Gentile community act if... Basically, we're Jews. We have responsibility to represent the Jews. And if we act inappropriately, it's going to be a shander. Shander in Yiddish means it'll be a scandal, it'll be embarrassment. So we went to the baseball game. We all had to behave properly to make a Kiddush Hashem. And then there was this other word of Kiddush Hashem, which clearly belonged to a totally different world. And that was Rabbi Kiva, was Mekadesh Shem Shammai, who died on Kiddush Hashem. And Holocaust, who died on Kiddush Hashem. And Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, who were willing to die on Kiddush Hashem. And they just seemed like two totally separate worlds, totally separate spaces. And Rav Amital introduced a whole new dimension to it that allowed me to see one holistic sense of a life lived as Kiddush Hashem. And what he added to me, and then you'll see how it helped me integrate all these other parts of Kiddush Hashem, is that the state of the Jewish people in our world represents Hashem. The state, not just the state of Israel, but the condition of the Jewish people. And as that condition improves, Hashem is more present. As that condition declines, Hashem is less present in our world. Hashem is obviously infinite, spans the entire universe, doesn't make a difference what happens on this little globe that's one of hundreds of billions of globes. But on this world, the only world in the universe in which Hashem's presence is contested, our fate and our future reflects Hashem's presence in this world. And that to me, and his whole life was defined by that, because he lived through the Holocaust, which you will see in a moment, he felt was not just an attack on the Jews, but a regression of Hashem's presence in this world. And it was a dark period for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence. And all of a sudden it hit me, yeah, that's what life is. I'm here to represent Hashem. And every step I take, whether it's extreme, to Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, to make a stand and to die HaKadosh Hashem, because then I really present Hashem to this world, or subtle, because, oh, I'm a Jew and Jews act in a proper way, or not just individualistic, how I behave, but collective. How do we advance as a people? How do we grade our experience as a people? That's who we are. We're put into this world to be ambassadors for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to bring knowledge of Hashem into this world. And you know, to me, I was on this panel of rabbis, and one of the, you know, I write articles for newspapers and different Jewish weeklies, so I'm on a panel. They ask like these fun questions to the rabbis. So last night, I got a little message, which Haggadah are you going to use this year? Fun question. I have a panel of rabbis. I said, obviously, it's going to be Rabbi Sacks' Haggadah, because I want to honor his memory. And part of Rabbi Sacks' voice is that he restored to the Jewish consciousness the sense that our story is their story. And our trajectory in life is the trajectory of humanity. And we're the vanguard of humanity. We have responsibilities. And after 2,000 years in which we're very contracted and we have to live necessarily defensive and insulated and protected lives because we're under siege and we're beleaguered, now all of a sudden we have to remember that we're responsible for humanity. That's why it's so painful for me to see when we underperform in Corona, because it's specifically during a time of crisis that we have to set an example for people. When we don't set that example, it's really... in many ways, a betrayal of what Hashem expects of us, not just vis-a-vis ourselves, but vis-a-vis leading the world and setting a tone. Like, I had such high hopes that the Jews and the state of Israel would lead the world out of Corona. As I'm so proud that we're so advanced in Corona vaccination, that at least we're providing that information and that guidance. And I'm thrilled. Yes, we are the world's laboratory, and I'm thrilled to be there. That's our, and people are talking about our rights and our privacy. Of course, we should compromise our privacy, because that's what Hashem expects of us. We're not just seeing it for ourselves and our own privacy. And this all was captured by Rav Amital when he read a perek in Yechezkel that provided a different glance or a different vantage point on the Geula. And Rav Amital was always teaching us to look back at Tanakh, because history is cyclical. And the patterns that we see in Tanakh in previous moments of Jewish history, whether they're moments of suffering or moments of redemption, are apt to repeat themselves in very different ways in modernity, but you can get the basic structure. And that's another part of my life that Rav Amital revolutionized. He made Tanakh come alive, not just a book of history or national identity or morality, although it's all three of those, and prophecy, of course, but also a book that provides a template for our future redemption. If I want to live in this redemptive process, not just say, oh, Hashem is redeeming us, how can I help, how can I serve in the army, but how can I engage my mind and my heart in this process of Geula that Hashem has chosen me to be part of? And to engage myself, I have to understand it. And to understand it, Geula by definition is indecipherable, because it's Hashem descending into our world and changing it. And you have to be careful, because too many people are too political when reading Tanakh. I remember once I asked one of my sons, when he was in the army, with another yeshiva. I don't mean you know, another one of the yeshivas, you know, I mean, another one of the 85 Hevesder yeshivas in Israel. He was serving for Shabbos, and he said a Rebbe from one of those yeshivas came to spend Shabbos with them. So he says, tell me, did you enjoy his shiurim over Shabbos? He said, well, they're very political, Abba. It's like, what do you mean? He says, well, it was Erev Purim. And Koresh was Achashverosh, and Haman was Putin. And I would never go there. I would never have the confidence to start reading one by one associations in the Tanakh. If this happened in Sefer Ezra, then I can expect in 2022 this to happen. Or Menachem Begin was Yirmiyah. That type of clarity and certainty and cockiness to just read Tanakh. But on the other hand, if you read Tanakh carefully, you see patterns, general patterns. When you see those patterns emerging in our world, then you say, oh, we're living through this parak, we're living through that parak. And this is something Rav Amitel, he literally connected Tanakh to Geula. He had us read models in Tanakh and to appreciate Geula based on those models in Tanakh. So let's see what he said about this parak in Yechezkel and what he taught me about Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem, the state of Israel, based on the Yetzias Mitzrayim, that felt very different if you read it in Shmos, but if you read it in Yechezkel, it's not so different. In Shmos, Hashem's running the show. There's no expectation of the Jews in Sefer Shmos. They're fledgling, weak, they're vulnerable. Hashem, we can't even leave the house the night of Mitzrayim. Like, we're paralyzed. We've just been slaves for too long. We can't listen to Moshe's prophecy because of Kotzei Ruach and Avodah Kasha. Basically, come out with me and be my bride. But it's very one-sided, very unilateral. If you read Yechezkel, it's a totally different tone. Now, you could ask a question from a literary standpoint, why that tone is muted in Shmos and only emerges in Yechezkel. What does it say about Yechezkel? What does it say about Shmos? That's for Rabbi Levtech. But I'm not here to question the selection of tone. I'm here to highlight that other tone. In Yechezkel, Parachaf, Hashem says as follows. Bayomahu, first source, Nasasi Yadi Lahem Leotziah Meretz Mitzrayim. I decide I'm going to take them out of Mitzrayim. This is where Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz HaTzvi, the land that's desirable, not the land of the gazelle, the land that's desirable. Tzvi is desirable. Okay. Va'omar Alehem. Here's Hashem's invitation to us to take initiative and participate in Geula, an invitation which is completely absent in Va'eren Bo. Ish Shikutzei Einav Hashlichu. Uvegilulei Mitzrayim Altitamo. You become too immersed in pagan culture. Don't sugarcoat the past. The Jews in Mitzrayim worshipped idols. They're explicit midrashim. They fell into theological disarray. They retained their national identity, their clothing, their names, their dress, and it shows you how important Jewish culture is, because that provided the platform on which to resuscitate religion in Har Sinai. So it's so important not just to be religious, but to be Jewish. Obviously, in that order, religious, and right, religion is more important than Jewish identity, but culture and Jewish language and Jewish, like when I interviewed, I don't know who of you I interviewed, where they still ask that question. I used to ask on an interview, who's your favorite Jew that you've ever met or read about? They start thinking and they say, but he can't be religious. They say, who's a favorite Jew you met who's just such a good Jew, but not because they're Talmid Chacham or Tzedakah, they're just, they live their Judaism so deeply. To me, it was Menachem Begin, who didn't stand out as a religious figure, but his Judaism was lived so... Like, who do you know in high school that you met? Like, the non-religious teacher who came in to teach you in high school or in camp? But there's such a good Jew. Like, they just... Or the guy in shul who wasn't the biggest, you know, Talmud Chacham, but just, you know, he was so Jewish, so Jewish, that it's something to love Jews and to love your Jewish identity. So the Jewish people are mired in this chaotic world of paganism and sorcery and idolatry. Hashem says, just walk away. Just do that for me. Before Geula starts, take the first step. Human initiative always beats. It's always better than waiting for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to save you. What's our response? Source number one, Pasuk Ches, Yechezkel Perachaf. Vayamurbi, we rebelled. Lo avu l'shmo elai. They refused to listen. Ish ashikut seinayim lo ishlichu. They refused to get rid of their idols. Eskulei mitzayim lo asavu. They didn't abandon. Now, you may know these lines from Pesach. Va'omar l'shpel chamasi alehem. I wanted to pour my wrath. Why don't we say this on Pesach? L'shpel chamasi alehem. In the end of the Haggadah, during Kol Shel Aliyah, we say, Shefel chamascha el hagoyim, asher lo yida'ucha. Pour your wrath on the evil nations. But this phrase was originally hurled at the Jews, I'm threatening to annihilate the Jewish people, you don't deserve to be redeemed. So Yechezkel poses the question that Shmos doesn't dare to pose. Why were we redeemed if we didn't deserve it? For some reason, Shmos doesn't take our temperature, did we deserve it? Yechezkel does, and we didn't deserve it, and Hashem wanted to destroy us. So why didn't he? That's a reality that Shmos doesn't dare talk about. But Yechezkel does talk about it, because it's after Galus for certain reasons, Yechezkel. So what does Hashem say? Pasuk Tes. Here's the punchline. Va'as l'man shmi. I didn't redeem you because you deserved it. I did it for the sake of my name. Levilti hechel in hakoyim. There shouldn't be a chilul Hashem because so many hundreds of years have been invested in spreading the gospel of Hashem. Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov started to spread the word. Remember, Yetzias Mitzrayim happens 2,500 years into history. It's not a few months after Brias Olam. It's 25 years of moral mayhem and 25 years of theological chaos where people are worshiping grotesque gods with horns coming out of their head and teeth coming out of their nose and angry gods. And finally, a clan of people had begun to spread the word of a loving God and a compassionate God and a transcendent God and an exclusive, like all these ideas were starting to take hold and say for Bereishis. Now, if that people is eliminated, all that is going to regress. And Hashem's going to have to start again. That word regression means Chilul Hashem. Any regression of Hashem's presence is a Chilul Hashem. So Hashem redeemed us, not because we deserved it in Mitzrayim 3,300 years ago, because we represent Him, and sometimes we are redeemed because Hashem's presence has to be maintained in this world. Rav Amital said that's exactly what he felt happened in 48. Are we more deserving of Gula than the generation of the Vilna Gaon, or the generation of the B'Kiva Eger, or the generation of the Rambam, or the generation of the Shulchan Aruch? I don't want to answer that question. But one thing is clear. The Shoah was the single greatest Chilul Hashem since the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Let that idea resonate within you a little bit. It wasn't just another pogrom, inquisition, persecution. We believe, and this is hotwired into Zionist thought, we believe it was a historical shift. The systematic attempt to eliminate everything and anything Jewish from the streets of Europe was not just another garden variety pogrom, not that pogroms are garden varieties. Hitler had lists of 300 Jews in Albania in his bunker. Could you imagine that? You have enough on your mind, you have to worry about 300 Jews in Albania. He had pictures of synagogues in Manhattan that he was looking to blow up and dismantle when he made it to the shores of the United States. And it wasn't just the Jewish people who were under siege during those years, it was the presence of Hashem. Where was Hashem during those dark years? To the average onlooker, to the believer, Hashem is always there, regardless of how light or dark it is. But to the average bystander, these were years of darkness and evil. Now be very careful. This is what you shouldn't say, this is what you should say. What you shouldn't say is that the state of Israel could only be brought into existence by the Holocaust. It was payback for the Holocaust. That type of moral equivalency, Rav Amital taught us to avoid. Holocaust is too large to associate anything with it as an equalizer. But the following statement Rav Amital told us all the time. A Chilul Hashem, the magnitude of the Shoah, required a Kiddush Hashem to respond to it. And Rav Amital felt that Yechezkel Perek Chaf happened again in 1948, where we didn't necessarily deserve to be redeemed, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu could not allow that regression of His presence. Just think of it differently. What would the Jewish world look like today without the state of Israel in the wake of the Holocaust? That's a very, very scary prospect. Very scary prospect, especially for someone like myself who believes, and many would disagree with this, that there's only Torah being learned in Lakewood and Mir today because of the state of Israel. So to me, the spread of Torah, which you could claim is autonomous of the state of Israel, because it's happening in Lakewood, it's happening in Mir, they're not necessarily proponents of the state of Israel. To me, it's all a question of Komiyot, of Jewish pride and Jewish identity. And we have Komiyot. One of the things we do is we learn a lot of Torah. And we gather in stadiums and celebrate Torah. And secular Jews have a different form of Komiyot. But where would we be without the state of Israel? How many Jews today, the only thing they're holding on to about their Judaism is the state of Israel? How many millions of Jews? And that's what I see in the state of Israel, and that's what I celebrate on Pesach about the state of Israel. Eitan.
Probably a longer answer, which you could avoid. But how do you rationalize, like, the people in America who don't believe in the state of Israel that learn Torah?
So I still believe that there's a metaphysical, subconscious pride of being a Jew. And it excuse the word, cascades, or it infects one Jew after another. And that if I'm proud of my Judaism and I give a shiur, whatever, and someone hears the shiur, even if they disagree, it creates movement, it creates dynamism, it creates... Because Ramatel also taught us, and as rationalists, it's harder for you to understand that, but there are larger metaphysical forces that shape human experience. It's not just my free will and my experience and my psychology. There are, now, how do you divide the line between larger metaphysical forces and free will? That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's algorithm. But that's baked into Jewish identity. You believe there's a terminus to Jewish history. You believe it's not all open-ended. But wait a second, you're a free man. So how do you calculate freedom of choice with larger historical forces? That every Jew has to find some solution to. But as a person who believes in metaphysical forces, like I believe anti-Semitism is a metaphysical force. There's something baked into human identity because we represent God and we challenge the world humanity morally and theologically, therefore we'll be hated. Now, if you go over to your average anti-Semite, he's not going to be able to repeat that Dvar Torah for me. But I still believe that it affects the broader calculus, and then each person chooses whether to be part of that metaphysical trajectory. So it's the same thing here. I believe that there's Kovamiyot handed down to the Jewish people. And that Kovamiyot comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu resuscitating our pride, the major part of which is the state of Israel. And that resuscitated, because I know better. I lived in a world in which there weren't a lot of people learning Torah. I saw this evolve when I was your age. There wasn't 10,000 people in Lakewood and 10,000 people in Mir. There weren't summer programs of Torah learning. There wasn't thousands of people learning Daf Yomi. I still remember a world of sunken Torah learning. And I've seen the state of Israel grow in so many spheres, and I've seen the Torah world as one of the spheres that I think the state of Israel is responsible for, even if it galvanizes people who aren't able to sign their name on the dotted line as someone that buys into the state of Israel. Okay? That's Avraham Mittal's Torah for tonight. Did we make it? Yeah, we made it.